Well, good morning, everybody. Darren Saul here, your host of Playing With Perspective, the Suspended Animation Podcast. I have episode 89 today. We're growing. It's a lovely day, middle of the week, and I have the amazing Bronwyn Williams joining me today. How are you, Bron?
I'm doing exceptionally well.
Ah, very good. I love your outfit there. It's very colour coordinating in your place as well.
Thank you. And these are my brand colours.
Ah, perfect.
But I bought these before they were my brand colours. I wonder why they're my brand colours.
you're on brand today.
I am on brand today.
I love it. Now, for everybody who doesn't know who Bron is, let me give you a little bit of an insight. In 2012, Bron Williams came face to face with her own biases of latent racism and white superiority while working with asylum seekers on Nauru. Now, as the bias expert, Bronwyn works with boards and teams to build awareness of bias in company culture, leadership and management, and staff welfare. So you guessed it, we're going to be chatting about what's your water, bias, and how we can overcome it. So welcome again, Bron.
Thank you very much, Darren.
Awesome. Now, Bron, I love that topic or that analogy, what's your water? Tell us, where did that come from?
Well, when I first started to research unconscious bias off the back of my own personal experience, I came across an old Chinese proverb that says, a fish is the last one to know what water is. And for me, being a picture person, a metaphor person, it immediately made sense that our bias is like the water is to the fish. We swim in it all the time, but we don't know it's there.
So true. A bit like tunnel vision, but kind of a bit different.
Yeah, there's lots of metaphors. I often use the metaphors of blinkers, lenses that we see through. Yeah, there's lots of ways and pictures that we can use.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'd love to hear more about your story and what led you to start working in this field and exactly what is bias, because bias can be, you know, probably applied to many different things.
Yeah, it certainly can, Darren. I went to Nauru with the Salvation Army. I had been working with them. And in 2012, the federal government started up offshore processing again. They'd had it a number of years under the Howard government. And they started it up again, this time on both Nauru and Manus Island. And the Salvation Army sent an email around to its officers and employees saying, would you volunteer for a month? Now, I didn't put my hand up because I desperately wanted to work with refugees or work in the tropics. I put my hand up because I couldn't think of any reason why not to. So it was one of those random, serendipitous decisions that we make that actually went on and changed my life. And I know that's a cliche, but it really did change the course of my life. So I went there for 4 weeks, just drawing on my background as a teacher. So I was teaching English to the men, the asylum seeker men who were there. But it was on the very first day, actually, that I started to become aware of something, and it had a physical feeling. I had this rumbling in my tummy, just beneath my ribs, as I walked through the camp for the first time with other people. And as I reflected on that, I realized that physical feeling was fear. And as I thought a bit more deeply about this, I realized I actually wasn't afraid that these men might hurt me, but more because they were different. They spoke different languages. They had different skin color, and they were largely different faiths to mine, because most of them had come from Muslim countries. And as I realized that and thought more, and you will guess I am a fairly reflective person, I realized that because I had no real physical reason to be fear, my fear came out of the fact that they were different. And for me, growing up in a very white, monocultural, conservative Bible Belt area of Sydney, who hadn't mixed with people from different nationalities much at all in my life, it was the stark realization that I had this latent racism purely from my upbringing. And that shocked me. Because I wouldn't have said I had a racist bone in my body. But I did, just from my upbringing. And then...
That was kind of subconscious, really. It's subconscious.
It is subconscious. It's definitely an unconscious, hidden thing.
Yep.
And I'm going to say every human being on the planet has some form or forms of bias.
Yeah.
And most of us suffer from a racial bias of some sort, purely from growing up in one particular people group. So that was the start of it. Then as I went back and worked as the religious liaison officer, and you know, Darren, I am so, so pleased I came to grips with that fear to start with, because the role that I took up as a permanent, like fly-in, fly-out role, was the religious liaison officer. And I was responsible for the religious needs of all the asylum seekers. That didn't matter whether they were Christians or Muslims or Buddhists or Hindus or Zoroastrians, you know. I had to look after them all.
Yep.
And because I'd come face to face with seeing difference as a threat, I could turn that on its head.
Yeah, and that forced you in a way to
see difference as an asset.
Yeah, that forced you to become exposed and to dive into all those different religious groups and cultures and traditions, and kind of forced you to open yourself up in a way.
It did. And we had the Salvation Army, you know, big tick to them, because they employed often refugees themselves, people who had permanent residency in Australia, as cultural advisors on our team. So we had people from Ghana and Vietnam and Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, as well as, you know, the UK and Australia and the USA. So we had this hugely diverse team, and I learnt so much from them.
Yep.
And then I could give my best as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, certainly opened me up, broadened my perspective hugely.
So, I mean, if you had to define the word bias, is there a particular definition that you like to use?
Yeah, bias is where we privilege a set of ideas or a group of people over and above another set of ideas or people, and often to the detriment of that other group. It's all about othering and saying they're less than, they're not as good as, we're better, that sort of thing. And it forms so early in life. It comes from our family, the culture that we grow up in, the music that we listen to, the sports that we play, so much, the media. All sends us messages, and as children, we don't have the capacity to go, oh, I don't like that message. We just absorb it.
That's right. And I suppose when you're younger, you're much more impressionable. So maybe a lot of those biases are formed in the earlier years.
Oh, absolutely. That is definitely where they're formed, before we have the cognitive ability to decide whether they're the messages that we want to take on or not.
Yeah.
But what we get to do as an adult is actually look at those messages and say, actually, that doesn't fit with me, which is the same it was for looking at my racism. That didn't fit with how I saw myself.
Wow, what a story. That's incredible. And do you think that some people or some subgroups are more prone to bias than others? Or is it just, again, that development of upbringing and you know, all those different aspects of society that form those in our earlier years?
That's a very good question. I like it. No, because I think we can fool ourselves into thinking that we're not biased, or that somebody's more biased than others. So the short answer is, I think everybody is biased.
Yep.
I firmly believe that.
Yep.
We all have different biases, and some of us allow those biases to have more impact in our lives. And we only have to look at the news that comes from our own country, but also from overseas, where we see particularly racist bias being acted out on, or, you know, in varied violent ways.
Definitely.
So some people allow those biases and they actually foster them.
Yeah. And your biases can manifest in some, you know, some serious and violent manifestations.
They can. And I think they're the ones where we can look at and go, well, I'm not like that. But what we're failing to do when we say I'm not like that is we're failing to look at, well, what am I like though?
Exactly.
What are my hidden biases? What are the things that may not be as overt as someone pointing a gun at someone or killing somebody. Yeah. But they're just as hurtful to ourselves and to other people.
Yeah, a good point. To ourselves and other people. I really like that because it slows our own growth and it hinders our own growth.
It does. Yes, indeed. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I like to work with executive teams, because they're the leaders in their organisations. And often I think they get fooled because they've made sure that diversity and inclusion programs are running in their company, but they haven't actually stopped to really think, is this impacting me too and my decisions? Yeah. And if I did stop and think about it, how can our company be even better than it is?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's chat about that because I'd love to get into that kind of content. I mean, what are the implications or the effects of bias on an organization?
Well, some of them, and some of the, I actually have a bias checklist for companies. And so things like if you see that you have real difficulties with staff retention, or, you know, staff are leaving at an increasingly higher rate, that's an indicator that there's a bias impacting your staff relations.
Yeah.
If things like bullying and harassment continue to be the normal way of behaving in your corporation, despite having done bullying harassment training, you can know that there's a culture of bias that allows those sorts of behaviours to happen. There's things like, the best one is actually if boards are brave enough to actually look at the composition of their board and the composition of their staff. Yeah. And if you've got a much diverse group of people in the lower parts of the hierarchy, so a good blend of men and women, a variety of different nationalities, and yet by the time you get to board level, then like 99% white and, you know, at least 50% male, then
You start to see a picture.
You start to see a picture forming. And I don't want to come, I'm certainly not a man hater and I'm certainly not a rabid feminist. But what I'm trying to help boards and executives teams to see is that when they have diversity at the helm, then they've got access to this much broader perspective.
Yep.
They will make decisions that are better for the company and the company's bottom line. Like there's been reports from McKinsey that show categorically that companies that have diversity in those upper echelons are actually like 25% more likely to have above average financial returns. Who doesn't want that?
Exactly. And it kind of makes sense because they represent a larger percentage of their target audience and they think and market and sell and operate to the right people because they understand them.
That's correct.
Kind of makes sense, really.
Yeah. It does make sense, but I think we've had so many structures and systems in place for such a long time and those people who benefited from those, just like I have, you know, as a white woman, I've benefited from those things.
Yeah.
We've got to actually, though, have a hard look at ourselves and say, but could it actually even be better for all of us, myself included, if I opened myself up to more or opened the company up to a diverse range of thinking?
And do you work with a range of different companies or organisations or particular groups?
No, look, I work both with non-profits. I've done some work with the Salvation Army in this area, but also my most recent client was an organisation that is a very blokey organisation. Yep. It's an association of people who have those scissor platform lifts and, you know, that sort of hiring situation. I'm happy to work across the board of people, but of people who are in that leadership position because that's where it must come from. This can't be a bubble up from the bottom. This is actually kind of come down from the top.
Like leadership and culture is driven from the top, without a doubt.
It certainly is, yes.
And so how do you actually go about working with them to overcome bias? Tell us a bit about the process.
Well, the first thing and the first step is awareness building. And I always say that awareness is more than 50% of the game.
Right. Yeah.
Because I'm not convinced, and I know we've used the idea of overcoming bias. I sometimes think when we use that word overcoming, it means eliminating. It doesn't actually, because I don't think we can ever get rid of our biases because they've almost become part of our psychological DNA.
Yep.
But we can overcome the negative impacts of them in the workplace. So the first thing is that I do is when I talk with a group of leaders is to just build awareness. I give examples, some of my own story, but others of things that are happening in our world that they'll go, oh, I see that. I hadn't seen it from that perspective. It's that idea of starting to connect the dots.
Yep.
So it's about building awareness, then helping them understand what the impacts are on their business, but also then giving some takeaways. And if after that they want to delve more deeply into what are the specific biases that are of play here, we can move then on into some corporate workshops.
Okay, great. And do you get data collection or do you speak to some of the employees and to get real-time feedback as to what's happening and kind of feed that back to leadership? Mm. How does that work?
Well, that's certainly, that's not something I generally do myself, but I do encourage leaders to do that for themselves, gotcha. Particularly to take note, to do surveys with people who have only been with the company for a short time.
Okay.
Because when you go into a new situation, you see things much more clearly than people who have been in that situation
yeah.
for a long time and become used to the dynamics and the culture.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, so they are your key people in your organisation to survey about bias because they see it.
Yeah, I love that. As you mentioned, that analogy of the fish is so good. The longer you're in an organisation, the more you're like that fish doesn't yep. see what's going on around them.
Whereas that's right.
the person does because yeah. they're fresh into an organisation.
That's right. And there's no... just trying to think of... Don't you love it when words just disappear? yeah, look, there's no malintent, I believe, from leadership.
No.
It, you know, generally people are trying to do the right thing, the best thing, the good thing.
Yeah.
It's just that they literally can't see.
That's right. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And so I'd love to maybe hear an example or two of, you know, working with a particular organization, obviously not mentioning any names or mentioning names of organizations, but maybe just give us a little case study or story as to what you found when you started working with a company, how you moved them through the process and what the results were. I'd be fascinated to hear.
Sure. The one that comes to mind was working with a particular group of managers within a larger organisation and they were going through change.
Right.
There was a huge changes happening yep. in the organisation. And it's often, as we have seen with COVID, that when changes happen, actually our biases bubble to the surface.
Yeah, true.
So I took this group of managers through a two-hour workshop to look at what were the things they were hanging on to, what were the things that were they were getting stuck on, where were the ways in which they could maybe move forward. Yeah. With some
how
freedom.
Is it affecting their business? Their
yeah, jobs, those sorts of things. And at the end of the workshop, the a huge feedback from the participants around the awareness raising. You know, they just went, my goodness, you know, there was so much clarity for them
yeah.
In this particular environment. And then the feedback I got from the like the overall manager was that this had opened this group of managers up to a totally new perspective.
Fantastic.
On dealing with their particular client group.
Yep.
And so, you know, I felt my job had been done
yep.
because again, it's opening up. That's why I use the tagline, making bias conscious.
Yeah, yeah. And I really love, that's really interesting because I suppose in an organization, you can have bias towards your employees, but you can have bias as well towards your customers.
Yes. And we call it unconscious because it is, yeah. it's hidden,
yeah.
but it comes out. And I'll give you a personal example. I do a lot of work on LinkedIn. That's where I, because a lot of the executive teams that I want to work with, that's where they play. And like on Facebook, you get friend requests or connection requests.
Yeah.
And I find myself, I have to stop, because often I will automatically say yes to someone who is white skinned and have second thoughts about someone who is dark skinned.
Yeah.
Now, and then I have to take myself to task and say, Bronwyn, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And I have to reflect on it again and go back. And then I do a, you know, I look at the profiles of both of them, think, okay, actually, who do I really want to be connected with?
Yep.
You know, and I think that's just my own, again, my own racial bias coming out of, you know, my childhood. It's an ongoing issue, but I, so there's a sense in which I do overcome it because I'm aware of it. I can work with it, and so I don't let it have to impact.
Awareness is key. And so if you can, the first step, if you can just open up your eyes to what you're doing and how you're behaving and how you're thinking, that will change the rest of what you do.
Absolutely, because then you get a choice.
Yeah.
See, while ever something remains unconscious, we're operating at that instinctive level, and we're not aware of the impacts of those biases on our decision making.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been hearing this term unconscious bias more and more lately, only the last year or two.
Mm.
Why do you think that all of a sudden it's time? It has, have we hit critical mass in this subject, or why now?
I don't know. I'm just glad I'm alive to see it happen. You know, I've lived a few decades. You can tell that by the colour of my hair. And I look back over, you know, what life was like when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I see how far we've come. Sometimes you sort of go, gosh, we've still got a long way to go.
Yeah, sure.
Say with, you know, with equal pay for women, equity for women, equity for people of colour. We've still got a long way to go. But I think the more we talk about it, whether it, you know, it's racial bias, gender bias, age bias, whatever it is, I think now we're actually starting, because we've, one thing builds on another, because we've been looking at, say, gender inequity, and we've been looking at racism, we're then able to look more broadly at other forms of bias as well. And because the conversation is out there, it normalizes the topic. And therefore, we talk about it. So I think it's just this accumulation of ideas. People are going, oh, I'm starting to see what you mean. Oh, we can talk about this.
Yep.
See, I don't think as a child growing up in Sydney, I don't think I'd ever heard of, well, anything like the Black Lives Matter movement, even though, you know, in the US things were happening. They weren't happening here in Australia.
Right.
Well, now, you know, you've got to be on another planet to have not understand that. So the conversation keeps going on and keeps raising our understanding and our awareness.
Yeah, and I think that's really, that's true. I mean, Australia is so multicultural. It's getting more and more multicultural all the time. And maybe that progression, that journey, has also allowed us to deal with bias in a more positive way and actually bring awareness to it, because we are so exposed to so many cultures and religions and races and ways of life, et cetera, whereas some other countries might not be as much. So it's probably a good thing for us on our journey towards, you know, managing and creating awareness for unconscious bias.
I would agree with you there. I think Australia has one of the greatest potentials in the world to do this well. And yet if I will raise...
I can see a caveat coming.
A contentious issue. White Australians still need to deal with the heritage that we have of our colonial past and the impact on our Indigenous peoples.
Yeah.
And we haven't done that well. It's a tortuous relationship we have with our past, and I know I've done my own journey in this, and sometimes I fall back into old ways and I have to pull myself up again.
That's true.
But until white Australians can actually come to grips with the part that their ancestors have played in where our Indigenous peoples are now.
Absolutely.
And we then really address the systemic issues that we have. That's actually going to be key because, as I said, the potential is huge here in Australia.
Unless we recognise our past, we can't move forward in a way.
That's right. That's right. And look, I've been through the whole, you know, but it wasn't me, you know, my parents didn't do that. But the reality is I have privileges just because I've got white skin. Yeah. I don't necessarily deserve them any more than somebody who has a different coloured skin.
Absolutely.
And it's just part of the system. We've got to fix the system, change the system.
Yep.
But I think that's up to us to do.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. And so, Brian, if people want to get in touch with you to organise a consultation or a workshop, what's the best way for them to do that?
Email is the best. It's info@bronwilliams.com.
Okay. And you have a
website? Or you can stalk me on LinkedIn.
Do you have a website?
I do. It's bronwilliams.com. So it's got the https://... in front of it, but bronwilliams.com.
All right, beautiful. I'll make sure I put those links in the notes for everybody so they can find you, your email, your LinkedIn, and your website. And Bron, thank you so much for being on the show today. That's a fascinating discussion. And I hope it's kind of open up everybody's eyes and created some awareness for, you know, starting that journey of self-discovery to that degree in that respect.
It is, and it's a wonderful journey.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful journey. Thanks, Darren, so much.
My pleasure.
It's been great talking with you.
I always like to ask my guests to leave us with one or two thoughts before we finish the show. Anything that comes to mind in terms of this subject?
Yes, I'm just going to leave you with a question.
Great.
What's your water?
Well done. I love it. Well done. Perfectly said. I love it. Awesome.
Thank
you very much for coming on the show. And to everybody that's listening and viewing, thanks for supporting the podcast. And we'll see you very, very soon for another episode. Have a great day.